Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And love letters, as you know, are for anybody at any time, for any reason you have something to say in the most loving or compassionate or just fun and inviting way. Why take gratitude to the grave? It doesn't serve anybody. You might as well, if you have a wonderful thought about someone, write it down, put it in an envelope, stamp it, and mail it, and just see the magic that comes out of that. Today's guest is Jeri Jewell, a name that many of you probably know. She is an actor and an author and a comedian.
Yes, hello. I am. Hello.
So I'm going to just ask you to kind of start right in, because it's always wonderful to hear from people who have become successful at something or are just living life beautifully and doing what they should be doing. So can you tell a little bit about yourself first?
And a little bit about myself.
Yes. What do you want people to know about you first? Let's say you've just met somebody. What's the first thing you want people to know or to see?
To see me as who I am.
And who is
who I am. Mm-hmm. Not the image, but the person. The human.
So what's the difference? Like, when you say the image, you mean what they see visually or what you are in movies and...
Both. Uh-huh. Just people who see Jeri as Jeri see me the best.
Oh, nice. Okay. And when did you first realize that you could be an actor or a comedian? I mean, what was your first job? What was your first inkling?
Well, it's interesting. And when I was about, I think I was 12, mm-hmm. and I am what you call a survivor of special ed. I spent all my childhood years in special ed. Mm-hmm. And I've never told this story, so you get a scoop. Emmett Kelly Jr. came to the school one day.
Oh, wow.
And he gave us each balloons and tied balloons on wheelchairs for kids who couldn't hold them. Uh-huh. And I thought that I wanted to be a clown. Mm-hmm. When I grew up, just like Emmett Kelly Jr.
Now, what appealed to you about that?
I think at the time, it appealed that everybody loved him, and also that I could hide cerebral palsy, that you'd never know I have it if I'm in a clown suit.
Oh, I see. Okay. Would that have been true?
I don't know. I never would have found.
Okay.
And then I became interested in Carol Burnett.
Oh.
And I loved Carol Burnett, and I loved the fact that she could make people laugh and that she had a wonderful sense of humor. And so I started writing Carol when I was about 13.
Oh, wow.
And told her how much I loved her show and how much it meant to me that people were laughing with her, not at her. That it was a loving, healing laughter, not a malicious, mean one. Uh-huh. And I wanted to be like her when I grew up. And I told her that I had cerebral palsy. What do you think? And I have a total of probably 12 letters from Carol Burnett.
Oh, well, so that gets right to love letters. I mean...
In that time, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Powerful, then.
And the essence of every letter that I ever received from Carol was basically always the same. Don't quit. Keep going. There's no guarantee that you'll become professional. Uh-huh. There's no guarantees in life, period. The important thing is to put out the effort and to try. Because no one knows what they can do unless... They try.
Oh, yes.
And when I was a preteen, like 12, 13, I guess I was a teen, uh-huh. some of her letters I used to carry in my back pocket everywhere I went.
Oh, you're just my dream girl of the day.
Because they meant so much to me. And whenever I got in a hurdle or someone said, you're in a dream world, you're never going to do that. Dear Carol Burnett.
What made you... reach for the pencil and paper. How did you know where to address it? This is all important information for people.
How did I know that?
Do you remember?
Good question.
Okay, but the point is you found it out somehow.
I'm sure I wrote her at CBS Studios.
Okay. So yeah, you figured out
in my young mind, that's what I would have done.
Yes. And so you figured out your best chance for it's getting to her.
Yes. I mean, I didn't know about Screen Actors Guild and actor and any of that at that age. I just, you know, saw the show was on CBS and found out the address.
Now, were you surprised when you heard back from her?
Oh, my God, yes. And it was...
And it was, wait a minute, I just want to say it was obviously a love letter to her.
Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, when I was 16, I ordered tickets to her show at CBS Studios. And it was the show where she wore the drapes on her shoulders.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, so explain about that for people who may not know. That was the Scarlet O'Hara.
Gone with the Wind.
Will you describe it and tell about it?
It was an incredible classic episode, and it got the longest laughs in television history of a spoof on Gone with the Wind, yes, and her wearing the drapes on, right, her shoulders as a dress, yes, coming down the stairs.
For those of you who may be too young to remember this,
yes,
and culturally deprived, Gone with the Wind, there is a scene in which Scarlett O'Hara has made herself a ball gown,
yes,
out of the green velvet drapes,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly,
yes,
what it was.
And so Carol Burnett actually came out with the curtain rod over her shoulder,
yes,
draped. Oh, I know. That was priceless.
Yes, it, yes, was. And I didn't know that I was sitting in the middle of history. And I was sitting there with my friends. And at the beginning of the show, she always used to raise the house lights to,
yes,
accept questions from the audience.
Oh, you were in the audience for this,
yes,
one. I'm sorry. That just went over my head. Uh-huh.
I was a kid. I wasn't a guest on the show.
No, in the audience.
I was in the,
no,
audience.
No, I was thinking watching it on television, but you were,
no,
there.
No,
okay.
I was sitting in the front row.
Sorry.
And she raised the house lights, you know, to accept questions, and I had my hand raised, and she didn't call on me.
Yeah.
And she said, okay, let's get on with the show. And during the whole time, I was like, I can't believe she didn't call on me. She didn't call on me.
Well, there's a growth
and
experience for you.
Like, will you shut up?
You know, but this was after you had the letters from her.
Yeah, I mean, just, no, get over it, Jay. No, I'm sitting there. And Tim Conway cracked up Harvey Korman so bad that they had to stop filming and take a break.
He did that a lot. I,
yeah,
recall,
I know,
that.
And he did, yes, it this particular, yes, evening. And when they took the break, I'm back with my argument. I can't believe she didn't
and
call.
And apparently you're still singing from it. Oh,
and
so
Audrey, my friend that was with me, said, well, you better think of something to say real quick because she's coming over here. Oh, she is not.
Was she?
Yes, she is. And I turned around. She extended her hand. She said, hi, I'm Carol Burnett. You must be Jerry.
Oh, she knew that? Oh, because you had said that you have to,
And I said, how'd you know? And he goes, just a clue.
Oh, but you had already mentioned in your letter.
Well, yeah, that I had cerebral palsy.
Right.
It was really obvious.
So she had an educated guess.
Yes, a very educated guess. And she said, I want you to know that I love your letters.
Oh.
And I put your poetry up in my office for everybody to see. And I was amazed. I was just, there were tears in my eyes. And I said, Carol, I said, can you do me a real big favor? And she said, what? And she said, well, I wrote this paper for my English class on you. If you sign it, I might get a better grade. And she signed it, and I got an A.
Oh, this is amazing. But you're touching us so, I know you're, the memories of this are just delicious. I love the way you're telling it. But here's the thing. A love letter is really what comes from the heart enters the heart. And I always say, love letters change a life. A,
yes,
love letter? There's no love letter that doesn't change a life a little bit, and sometimes enormously. Look at this.
Well, I'll tell you something. What's interesting is that years later, I think in 93,
mm-hmm,
I went to see her in a play in Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she invited me backstage. And she's always been kind and good to me over the years, no question. And I was going through a particularly rough time that evening because my mother was dying of cancer also. And I said to her, I said, Carol, because I was so grateful for everything in life, knowing how fragile life was, watching my mother losing her life. And I said, do you realize what your letters did for me as a kid? I mean, I became a comedian and successful because of you. And I will never forget what she said to me.
I know what she said. I can imagine. Go ahead.
She said, Jerry, and she had tears in her eyes. She said, Jerry, whether I wrote you back or not, you still would have done it. Give credit to yourself.
Yeah, so I was going to say, you became a comedian because of you, not because of her. But a little encouragement is nice.
Yes. And she hugged me and she said, I'm glad that I was able to influence you so powerfully.
Yes. And sometimes giving person a strength in their own ability or confidence is a huge gift.
Absolutely.
It's a huge gift. Oh, I'm just so in love with this story. I'm so glad to hear it from you. Everything about it is what I know to be true. So when did you get your first actual job, either as an actor or as a comedian? I mean, when was your first actual performance yourself? And how old were you?
It was in October of 1978, so I had just turned 21.
Mm-hmm.
And I performed on open mic night.
At
the Comedy Store.
Yes.
And it was interesting because they introduced me as Jerry Jewell from Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
He drove a long way to get here.
Yes. Yes.
Because I had Jerry, which could be a man's name.
Of course.
The MC assumed that I was a he. And I got up on stage, and you could hear a pin drop. I mean, the whole audience was staring at me. Like, oh, my God, it's a he?
Oh, funny.
And he's really on a lot of heavy drugs.
Oh, my goodness. That is so funny. Did you correct them right away? What did you say?
Well, you know what's interesting is that what I found out about stand-up is that most comedians have to fight to get the attention.
Oh, of the audience?
Yes.
Because people are so badly behaved
and inattentive. Yeah, they're talking, they're drinking.
But
I didn't have to fight for that. I had it. My challenge, what am I going to do with it now that I have it?
Yes.
And I ended up getting a standing ovation the first night I ever performed.
So do you remember what, like, did you go with something prepared or was this extemporaneous?
I wrote it probably 3 days before.
Okay. So you knew where you were going once you got the microphone.
Yeah.
Okay.
I knew that I had five minutes. Back then it was five. It wasn't three.
Did it seem like a long time?
Yes, and I couldn't wait to get off stage.
Really?
Oh, I was terrified, petrified, but I wasn't going to give up. And in fact, the reason I even started at the Comedy Store was because I was going to school, to college, with a classmate and friend named Alex Valdez. And Alex was blind, and he was a stand-up comic. And we were sitting in the disabled services department, and I was really frustrated because I was flunking anatomy and physiology, algebra, all the logical classes.
For lack of interest.
I'm in part because I was in special ed too long, and they didn't give me the preparation that I needed.
Can we talk about special ed for a minute?
Yes.
Because you said something I thought was really interesting with your first sentence or so here. Was I'm a survivor of special ed.
Yes.
Now, so was that a negative? Can you talk about what that was to you?
Well, truthfully, there are pros and cons to that journey. The pros is, and I don't know that it's true today, but I'm 58 years old, so I'm the last of the baby boomer generation. And when I was a kid, I was not given the option to go to regular school.
But you're smart. Why not? I mean, it's like you could have understood everything.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh.
Because I had cerebral palsy. And I lucked out. I started school at 18 months old.
Wow.
But
like nursery school, that kind of something?
Yes. Uh-huh. And it was an incredible preschool. It was in Long Beach, mm-hmm. and it was for only children with CP.
Oh, nice. So they knew where they were going with...
Oh, it uh-huh. was a CP boot camp is what it was.
Okay.
And, but because of that, I got locked into the system. Oh. Once you're in the system, it's hard to get out. Even though uh-huh. I had the ability intellectually to move on,
right.
I was not allowed to.
So do they? Is that something that's no longer considered a block? I mean, if you can understand the material, don't you go to...
Oh, yeah, that is the
unless
case.
Unless you have other things like that make...
It's case by case.
Should be, yeah.
Yes, and the thing of it is, in my time, there was no option. Now, the plus side of that, in my time, I'm not saying it's true today,
mm-hmm.
I had the best physical therapy, the best occupational therapy.
Oh, that came with it?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
And the best speech therapy that you could ever need or want.
Mm-hmm.
So I had maximized therapy that I think was a threshold for the work that I did in life.
Oh, good. Okay. So then you did need speech therapy. That was helpful.
Oh, of course.
Oh, so I didn't realize that. Okay.
Combination of cerebral palsy and being hearing impaired.
Yes.
My speech was very, very slurred as a kid.
Oh, okay.
The combo.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very fortunate in getting those therapies, but academically
uh-huh.
and socially, I didn't get my needs met.
Mm-hmm.
It
yes.
was.
So when did you join regular classes?
Well, a tiny bit before high school, they experimented.
Mm-hmm.
And let me take a class here and a class there.
And that was good for you? You liked that?
Not really, because it was, I would do the class, and then in the afternoon, I'd be right back in special ed.
Oh, okay.
So that messes with your head.
Yes.
It's like, I must
yes.
not be good enough.
Yes.
Why am I still here?
Yes.
But in high school, now this is the other thing. I lived in Orange County,
mm-hmm.
and in the 60s, 70s, the only high school that catered to students with special needs was Troy High School in Orange County. So we were bused all over Orange County to go to this high school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ironically, I lived in that school district. So I was going to a school where all my friends went in the
mm-hmm.
neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really a taste of inclusion, but not completely. I had 50% special ed.
Mm-hmm.
50% regular classes because I had gaps
sure.
in my education.
Yeah.
After high school, I went to college, and that's when it all caught up to me because there was no more special ed to fall back on. You've got to pass these college courses or you fail.
So how did you do?
I did really well in abstract, creative psychology.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
History.
Sure.
But the math and sciences, I sucked.
Okay. But you did well at what you liked and what you wanted. What, when you were going to college, were you still looking towards a career in acting?
I was, mm-hmm. but I was very limited because I didn't come from a family that had a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so my schooling depended upon State Department of Rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
They were funding my education. So they had really strict guidelines as to what I could major in.
Really?
What they felt was a realistic, goal that was going to guarantee success. And I quoted Carol Burnett many times. But
really?
You can't guarantee success.
Oh, not only that. That's for you to choose.
Oh, I know.
Oh, that's so nervy. That's so nervy.
So I kind of, I got in trouble with state rehab many times in college for bending the rules a little bit. Okay, a lot.
Yeah. Okay, good.
And then finally, I was so frustrated, and that's where I met Alex Valdez. And I was saying, I'm flunking all these classes, and I can't get a job. I tried, you know, what normal young people would try, a waitress or, you know, working in a convenience store or whatever, and nobody's going to hire me. My hand.
I was
going to
say, waitresses does not sound like
yeah,
the perfect
you
job.
You want to wear your meal or what? Right. You know?
So how did you go about getting your first acting job? How did you end up on Facts of Life?
Well,
Cousin Jerry, which is what my children call you, Cousin Jerry.
You have to know about Alex, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Alex was a comedian.
Oh.
And worked at the Comedy Store. And I told him about my letters from Carol Burnett.
Okay.
And I really wanted to be an entertainer. And he said, well, why don't you do comedy at the Comedy Store like I do? I said, what do you do? I tell blind jokes. I said, well, I'm not blind, Alex.
Unfortunately, I'm not.
Well, you tell CP jokes, you little dinky face. So I did. And Fernfield Brooks heard about me, and she said, we got to see Jerry Jewell. I heard she's hysterical, and we need a performer for the second annual Media Access Awards. So she came to the Comedy Store and saw me perform and was blown away. And she said, oh, my God, you're exactly what we're looking for. So I did stand-up comedy for the Media Access Awards, the second annual Media Access Awards. And Norman Lear and Charlotte Ray were in my audience that night. And I ran into Norman in the elevator. And he said, you know, kid, you're really funny, but you're way before your time.
Oh.
I said, so wait a couple months.
Good for you. So was he, by the way.
Pardon?
So was Norman Lear. Way before his time with his...
Yes.
Yeah.
But
so,
that never stopped him.
That's right.
And it
that's,
never...
That's my point, yeah.
Yeah, and he knew that. That's why he said it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, that's what... That was his point. He said, I'm going to do something with you. You're gonna hear from me very shortly.
Oh, good.
And within 3 months, I was cast as Cousin Jerry, written by Norman Lear. The idea.
Nice.
The script was written by Ann Gibbs and Joel Kimmel. And it was a groundbreaking event.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was the highest Nielsen ratings Fact of Life had gotten to that point.
Now, isn't that a lesson right there for the people in charge of the industry?
Well, what I see the problem is that less and less and less is the industry willing to take risk. Norman took a risk. There was no guarantee of success with that move. And I'm grateful. And I am very close to Norman and love him with all my heart. He's an amazing man. I wish there were more Normans in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. It's a wonderful journey, which you're still on.
Yes,
and so
absolutely.
You said you were an author also. What did you write?
Yes. In 2011, my autobiography came out. I'm walking as straight as I can.
Oh, I read about it. Yes, of course. Of course. I've had a little moment here. I know about that. Yes.
Okay.
So, and people can find that on Amazon?
On
or
Amazon.
Books? Okay. Say it again.
I'm walking as straight as I can.
That's wonderful. And do you have a website you
do.
Want to tell people about? Well, let's say it.
Just jerryjewell.com.
I'm going to spell it because I always do that because we don't want to leave it up to people's imagination to think they heard it right. We don't want them thinking it's a him. Okay, it's GERIJEWELL.com.
Yes.
If you would like to know more about Jerry on your own time.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, darling. This is wonderful. So I have something to say. This is the point at which I'm still going to do it with you. Because love letters is a way of life, not just a one-shot deal. So if you were to write a love letter right now, who would it be to? Not that you haven't taught us enough about them in your life, but do you have one more in you that you would send?
One more? Yeah. I have a million more love letters. Is the person living or dead?
Doesn't matter. Oh, good point. Do you have... No, this is a really beautiful, important thing. Do you have people who are deceased you'd like to write letters to? Do it.
Yeah,
is
absolutely.
That what you're asking?
And they receive it. They get it.
Well, here's the thing. Where do you mail this? So do these people have children?
What do you mean?
Well, there's something really nice about writing a letter to someone we loved who's no longer living. And we say, you know, dear Sammy, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to send it to your children. So they'll know how I feel about you.
Well, if we can write to Santa Claus.
Oh, that's the truth.
Come on!
But you can mail these things and have them show up.
Of course you can.
But you can also mail it to yourself.
Yeah.
What about writing one to you? Not so appealing? No?
Nah.
Well, you know what? You've really done the best illustration in being brave enough and smart enough to pick up a pen and write to Carol Burnett.
Yes.
So what I want to say to everybody is, if you have the impulse to do that, don't be shy about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If I could write a letter, I would write a letter to my mom, who is on the other side.
Okay.
And thank her for the foundation that she gave me, the strength, the will. She didn't coddle me. She didn't spoil me.
Well, that's important information.
She prepared me for the pitfalls of Hollywood to pick myself up and get up and do it, you know? I've seen so many parents of children with disabilities, and they do everything for them, and they're always moving in and doing it. And my mother was like, oh, you fell?
Get up. Oh, nice.
Exactly.
I heard a phrase once in kind of relation to this, which was, the next kind act you do will kill her.
Yes.
Oh, God bless your mother. That's wonderful. Well, do you have sisters and brothers?
Yes, I do.
You said, yeah.
I have a younger sister who I'm very close to, and Gloria. And my brothers, David and Fred, who are a lot older than me, 7 and 10 years older. Mm-hmm.
So you have family. So, the reason I'm asking is sometimes it's so wonderful to write these letters. And in a generation from now, when you're gone, somebody will find them and know something important about you.
Well, you know, I have to tell you something. This is interesting. About 6 months ago, I was on Facebook, and someone sent me a private message saying that he had a scrapbook that belonged to me, and I would like to return it to you.
Wow.
And I wrote him back, and I said, no, I never had a scrapbook. Yes, you did. It's yours. I said, take a photo of it and show me it. And I had completely forgotten.
Oh.
In my early years in the 80s, I had so much of my stuff stolen. And that scrapbook ended up in his memorabilia shop over 30 years later.
Oh.
And there were letters from Carol Burnett, from Brandon Tartica, from Charlotte Ray, from Lisa Welchel. And he gave it back to me.
Okay, you're going to have to keep talking because I'm just going to be crying. Oh, that is wonderful.
It was amazing. My contract for the first episode of Facts of Life was in there. My contract for the Cheech and Chong film I did. My contract for the movie I did with Robbie Benson. All my early years that I had completely forgotten had even kept was in that scrap.
Well, okay, then double add that to the value of your written letters.
Yes.
Because what a gift it is to you when you get to see them.
Okay. I bawled when I saw it.
Oh, I know.
I just cried.
How could you not? Oh, my goodness.
And that it was in the hands of someone who cared enough to give it back. Yes.
Oh, thank you for doing this with me. I'm so happy to get to know you and, you know, in the flesh.
Thank you so much for sharing these stories
and the lessons that you have just taught here. The lessons are just invaluable. So everybody, just do what you know you can do. write letters, and see what happens. So until next time, I want to say one more thing, which I always say, that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter is a special occasion. It is a gift that will change a life, probably yours, and a gift that will be good forever and will come back to you someday as even a more intense gift than you knew it was.
Absolutely. No question.
You're on my side, huh? Okay, good. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen and
Jay Jewell
saying goodbye.